John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
Well, the excitement of baseball now is going on. Yesterday, even though we got a monsoon in that Washington game with the Yankees after six innings, we now have baseball going. Larry Stone, I know, is excited about that. Columnist for the Seattle Times. How do you describe the first night of baseball with the two games, Giants and Dodgers and Yankees, you know, going against the Nationals?
Well, first of all, it was great to have baseball back. Just the general weirdness, John, of, you know, the cardboard cutouts in the Dodger game, that was kind of surreal, that are placed right behind home plate. The empty stands, the piped in noise. I mean, that's all stuff that's going to take getting used to. But, you know, when you got a pitching matchup like Scherzer against, Garrett, Cole, I got a blank on his name there for a second. And, you know, Giants, Dodgers, that's always exciting. That's what the rivalry I grew up with. It's just great to have it back.
Yeah, it really is. And I think the one thing I think was noticeable was like, you know, there was a lot of, I guess, complaints last year that the ball is juiced, that this just, no, it's almost like cork. Looks to me like it's even worse this year. So I guess if you like home runs, that's the game right now. What did you notice about how balls were flying out of the stadiums?
It's funny. I heard Danny O'Neill talking about that this morning. I happened to tune it in. My thought was, we're talking about Giancarlo Stanton, the strongest man in baseball. I mean, he's, you know, I think he's going to crush a lot of balls, you know, it doesn't matter how lively or dead they are. Mm-hmm. But it's probably too early to tell. That, you know, there were Kiki Hernandez, who's not a huge power hitter, hit one in the Dodger game. You know, Adam Eaton, he's got moderate power. You know, that's something, those numbers will play out over time. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if they left the ball the way it is, because in times of stress, baseball always seems to feel that power and home runs are what the fans want. And so I don't expect any change in that.
No, that's true. So you're able to watch it. So what do you think the expectations are for the Mariners? You know, clearly I saw that Fangraph projected them to be a 22-38 team, a .367 winning percentage. But obviously the thing that they have to do is be a little bit more even with the Astros. Can that happen? Because what were they, like 1-18 against the Astros last year?
Yeah, well, this year the Astros won't know what pitches are coming, so that's an equalizer right there. At least we don't think they will. You know, I picked them for 24 wins, so I'm not that far off of Fangraphs and the other projections. But, you know, in a 60-game season, it's really fluky things can happen, and now all these teams have been added to the postseason. There's more than half the field in each league, or more than half the teams are going to make the postseason, so they're, you know, I think a team at 500 or a little bit below 500 is going to make the postseason. Under this format, the Texas Rangers would have made it last year at 78-84. So you don't have to be a good team probably to make the playoffs at a time when eight teams in each league are going to make it. But the Mariners have, you know, they have decided flaws that are pretty well apparent. Their starting pitching is, has a lot of question marks. It's potentially good, but it doesn't look like there's any real ace. And they've got, you know, two guys in Walker and Graveman who are pretty much haven't pitched for 2 years, and then two young guys who have barely pitched in the major. So they're pretty much question marks. And then the bullpen, I think, is probably the weak link of this team, even though there's going to be a ton of them in bullpen, 11 relievers. But, you know, to me, that's their fatal flaw. And then a lot of young guys in the lineup who could be really good or could struggle. We just don't know. So, you know, they in 60 games, if you just get hot at the right time, you can at least contend. But I just don't see that this as being the year.
Yeah, no doubt. What kind of blow was it to lose Tom Murphy?
It's a blow. You know, he developed into kind of a leadership role on that team, even though he doesn't have a huge amount of major league experience. He has more than most guys on that team, and he's developed into a really solid catcher on both ends. I mean, he can hit. He's one of the better hitters last year, most productive hitters, and really leads the pitching staff well. It's a shame, you know, he had a chance. You know, he's been a guy who's been a journeyman most of his career, and he seems to have really found a home here and was going to be the everyday catcher, which he really hasn't been in his career. And then this happens. But by all accounts, listening to Scott Service, it's not a hugely severe injury, and he could be back pretty quick.
Yeah. Obviously, the stars, I mean, some of the pitchers were obviously stars in how they handled things, but it looks like Evan White and Kyle Lewis were probably the two hitting stars of the summer camp.
Yeah, no question about it. They had great camps. You know, Lewis, he didn't have a tremendous spring training way back in February and March, but I think he used the time off wisely, used it well, got stronger, worked on his hitting and such. And I mean, he's just been, he just looks like a budding star, although it's hard to judge when you're playing only intra-squad games against your own team and maybe facing pitching that will prove out to be not that good. But he just has that look to me. And White, you know, he's certifiably excellent glove man at first and really shows some aptitude at the plate. You know, I'm excited about his future and what he did, seeing what he can do. I mean, he looks to me like he could be a frontline first baseman for this team. So that would be two good building blocks if those two, you know, play out the way they've looked so far.
Mm-hmm. How do you like the starting staff right now, the six-man staff, which is young, and how good can it be in this first year?
Yeah, that's you know, I'm not sure. Marco is you know, steady. He is what he is. You know, he's an innings eater and a good solid pitcher. He probably wouldn't be the number one on most staffs, but he's the number one on this staff. You know, Graveman's been the real revelation of this camp. He could be a real find for them because he was a promising pitcher until he had arm problems. And now, you know, they've got him at a point where he's trying to resurrect his career, and he looks really good. And Taijuan Walker is in the same position. So those are two guys that if you're sort of taking a flyer on, you just don't know because it's been essentially 2 years since they've pitched. And then the two young guys, have shown a lot of promise, Dunn and Sheffield. So excited to see what they can do, but you just don't really know. They've barely pitched at the major league level, but they've shown flashes of being potentially, you know, solid pitchers. And then the big wild card is Kikuchi. They brought him in to great fanfare and spent a lot of money on this guy, and he had a disappointing year last year. But there were a lot of extenuating circumstances that could be used to explain that. You know, he had some personal issues with the death of his father, coming over to a new culture with, you know, a new baseball. I think that's a bigger factor than people realize to adjust to an actual different, bigger baseball. So, you know, supposedly he did all the right things in the off season, and he worked with Driveline on refining his mechanics. And but it's kind of an important year for him to show that the investment they made was worthwhile. So it's a staff with potential, but a lot of question marks. And, you know, the thing is, each of these starters are going to get 10 starts. You see, it's a six-man rotation over 60 games. So we're talking only 10 starts. The starter in a traditional season gets 30 or 31 or 32 starts. So they got a third of that. So that's not much margin for error to kind of show what you've got.
Are you looking forward to it over this weekend to get this thing started?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to be riveted to these games and looking forward to having them come back home next week, even though, you know, the fans won't be at T-Mobile Park. But, you know, I'm sure I'll be there for a lot of those games to watch them in person. But it's just good having baseball back. For a while there, it looked like it wasn't going to happen, and here it is.
Hey, great. Read Larry Stone at the Seattle Times, and thanks for joining us, and have fun over the weekend.
All right, you too, John.
All right, hey, listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. We bring out the report card next. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for The Report Card with the Professor.
In the Report Card we bring out every day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, we take the anecdotes, we take the social media comments and the voices, and we attach a grade to it, and we do this every day with Curtis Rogers giving us the Report Card.
Well, John, let's get started. Yesterday, big day here in the city of Seattle, especially within the sports community. We finally know the name of the NHL franchise. It's Seattle Kraken. They'll be taken to the ice in 2021. A lot of differing opinions on the name. Obviously, we shared ours yesterday. Two very well-known guys in the sports media, Michael Wilbon, Tony Kornheiser. They host PTI on ESPN. Yesterday, they gave their opinions of the team. Let's start with Wilbon here, and both of them not very thrilled with the name Kraken.
My instant thought was, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And I started just running through all the nicknames of all the teams in the NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, and NFL. And it's like, this is the worst. This is the worst one I have ever heard, Tony. I mean, I don't understand. Look, you can get something that is central to Pacific Northwest.
That's Will Bonds. And then here is Kornheiser, who was in agreement with.
Kraken is the worst name I have ever
heard.
Worst.
It's the worst.
The worst. Apparently, I did some reading on this, and a kraken is a legendary sea monster that dwells off the coasts of Norway and Greenland.
Where? Now, one more time. Where does it dwell?
Norway and Greenland. I was an English major. I wasn't a geography major. But I'm thinking Seattle isn't that close to Norway and Greenland.
No.
You know, if you want a fish, a real fish, you get the sockeye or something like that.
Now, John, these two, they're known for their outlandish opinions. Worst name ever? I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, that may be a little bit, you know, because you have dragons, you know, you have, you know, sea monsters and things like that. And so I don't think it's the worst name. Again, I prefer the sockeyes, but you can see that you got a nice uniform design out of it. You got a nice logo. You know, again, I give it a B because, again, I would give an A to the sockeyes, but the worst ever? I don't buy that.
Yeah, I give them saying it's the worst ever an F. Somebody pointed out on Twitter, somebody named Katie Smith, they responded saying, there are baseball teams named after socks. Like, that's, I would say that's a worse nickname than Kraken. Not down with Tony and Mike on that one, but do enjoy their show a lot. It's good stuff from them. But, not in agreement with them on that. John, let's also continue with the Report Card. How about Major League Baseball, just moments before first pitch last night, announcing they were going to expand their postseason to 16 teams for the 2020 season as opposed to the regular 10. John, how do you grade Major League Baseball waiting until the last possible second to come up with a plan for their postseason for the 2020 season?
Well, I mean, they got $50 million into a pool for the players, and that's good. You know, in a season like this, which, of course, you know, you have to put an asterisk on it because it's only 60 games, it creates more games, more excitement, all those different things. So, you know, I'll give it a B. I mean, I'm not going to be critical of it because, you know, I don't care about the timing. I mean, hey, Rob Manfred got something done. That's what I find to be amazing, you know, because, I mean, you saw how bad he was with the players and how contentious it was. So I think in this case, I mean, this is a little bit of a reward for the fans and doing that. And, of course, I mean, for the fans that you're in six different cities that now get a chance to get extra playoff games.
Yeah, I give Rob Manfred I'll give him a B- for getting something done finally. Like, he didn't wait 4 months to decide on this. He didn't wait. You know, he actually got something done when it needed to be getting done. I give Major League Baseball, I'll give him a B on this one, just because in the 2020 season, nothing is normal, and why not have more playoff baseball? It means more baseball games for everybody out there, and that's something that I think a lot of us are clamoring for, and we're finally going to get to see the Mariners in action tonight and, you know, more teams eligible for the postseason. I can't imagine people are going to be complaining about just more sports on the calendar since we've had just such a dry spell here over the last 4 months. Major League Baseball, I'm totally fine with you expanding the postseason for just the 2020 season. Now, if it was any other season, I might have an issue with it just because it really waters down the regular season to the point where if you can't determine who the best teams are after 162 games, then you really need to figure out something for yourself. But, yeah, Major League Baseball, weird stuff there. Also, John, we found out this morning that the Toronto Blue Jays do finally have a home, hopefully, for the 2020 season. They will reportedly be allowed to play in Buffalo so long as the lighting in the stadium is up to Major League Baseball standards. It sounds like the Blue Jays will have to bring in some portable lighting in order to make it so that they can play night games there. But, John, how are we grading the Blue Jays finally finding a home for the 2020 season, even after the season has gotten underway?
Yeah, I mean, at least I'm surprised they didn't go to get Buffalo a little bit earlier, because, again, it's like, okay, you can actually have some driving back and forth with some of the players getting back home if they live in Toronto and all that. So I think that's a better fit than Pittsburgh. And so I kind of like it. I'm going to give that an A. And I think the fact that at least, you know, it's somewhat in the area. I mean, again, it's not that far of a drive, and I mean, you can certainly, the fans up there are going to appreciate it because it's Buffalo and all this. So I'll give it an A.
Yeah, I imagine there's a good crossover of Blue Jays fans in the city of Buffalo just because of the proximity of the two cities. But yeah, why did baseball have to wait this long? Or why did, you know, obviously they weren't aided out by at all by the Canadian government waiting until, what was it, last week in order to decide that they weren't going to allow Toronto to play there. Hopefully they're able to get the lighting that they need in order to play night games there. But yeah, you know, Toronto, they got a home finally. They finally have a home for their ball club there. John, also on the report card, Raiders owner Mark Davis, son of the late Al Davis, you know, Al known for taking the fastest guy every year in the draft, regardless of position. It was usually a wide receiver. And the Raiders did just that in 2020, taking Henry Ruggs in the first round. Well, in an interview with The Athletic, Mark Davis said that pick was, in fact, inspired by his late father, Al, who loved taking the fastest receiver possible. So, John, how are we grading Mark Davis tipping his cap to his late dad and taking Henry Ruggs?
Yeah,
in the first round?
Because it was like, Al was like, you can't coach speed. You can't coach speed. You know, going back to Cliff Branch and all that stuff. And so, you know, I still think that Jerry Jeudy would have been the better choice, but that didn't go that way. But, you know, it does. And I think in that division, it really makes it interesting because, again, you have the great speed of the Kansas City Chiefs positions, their wide receivers. You've got great speed, you know, on Denver and some speed on the Chargers. And it kind of fits the nature of that division right now. And so, you know, I'll give it a B.
Yeah, I'll give it a B plus as well. I mean, just that organization, they do things by their own way. They've done it their own way ever since they've been in existence. And why stop now, especially with Mark Davis taking over for his dad as the team owner? I imagine the apple doesn't fall far from the tree with how Mark chooses to run that organization compared to his father, Al. Maybe not filing as many lawsuits as his dad used to do. Yeah, he would sue anybody and everybody if he could. But yeah, shout out to Mark Davis taking tribute there to his dad. That is it for today's report card.
Hey,
Professor,
be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we're going to go to Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710. And by the way, we got some breaking news as far as the most recent offer by the owners, which I kind of give an F to. they said, okay, we'll have a ceiling floor of 175 under the cap as opposed to 198. So take $23 million off the cap for next year. And then they did go with the one that I thought would be good as far as spreading the rest of the losses from 2022 to 2015, 4 years. So I'm 1-for-2 on that. But they, I mean, honestly, it does too much damage to the teams if you take $23 million off of next year's cap. It'll help Seattle because they've got $53 million of cap room right now before it's getting their last six draft choices, but it would destroy New Orleans. It would destroy Atlanta. It would destroy maybe even Tampa Bay. It would destroy the Dallas Cowboys. And so let's get that one off the books, but we're going to come back and take your text question, 710-710.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And it's time to take your text questions on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710. And so, Curtis, what do we have?
Well, John, let's start off with this really wild fact about the Seattle Kraken and merchandise sales going on right now. Ian Thomas, who writes for Front Office Sports, tweets this. He says, NHL Seattle is the NHL's best-selling expansion team ever. In the first 24 hours, over 50% more merchandise sales than the previous high set in 2017 by Vegas Golden Knights. The Kraken are also the top-selling team across all leagues on the Fanatics clothing network of sites so far today. So they are moving merchandise like crazy. The fever for Kraken is taking over the internet, John.
Wow, that's amazing. So you got to like that. And, again, I guess maybe I'll have to readjust my opinion on Kraken because if it's that popular. But, again, what you wonder about is the popularity of just hockey in this town because, I still remember, being at the owners' meeting, the NFL owners' meeting, when they opened up ticket sales and they sold out to 10,000 or 20,000 20,000 in like 10 minutes. And now what they have like about four times that on the waiting list. And so I think everybody's anticipating great things for this hockey town. I mean, it's kind of like when Seattle got the chance to get NFL football, how everybody embraced that. They're doing the same thing with hockey.
Yeah, there's going to be a fever around this team for a while, John. And I can't wait for when the first puck drops in 2021. That's going to be a lot of fun. So shout out to Seattle for holding it down. John, from the 907, they want to know, do you think Justin Britt signs anywhere during training camp?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the only thing that's holding him up, and first off, I would imagine his recovery is okay, is the fact that, he can't get a physical. And, now you notice that there's very few agreements and signings and stuff like that. I think, what was it? There's only, if you go into June and July for veterans, there's only been like six guys that have signed, okay? And so, you have to wait for that. And, of course, all the guys are going to be tied up, all the physicians, next week. And part of the negotiation has to be when teams can take guys in for physicals. And that would probably be sometime late next week because Tuesday is going to be the big day because they're going to be – well, actually, no. In fact, it might be a little longer than that because, first you come in on Tuesday. Like if you do this with the Seahawks, you take your test and then you wait for 2 days to see the results. And then you come back on the fourth day, take another test, and then you go ahead and wait a day. And then after, if you're cleared with two negative tests, then you can get your physical. So I think this is probably going to postpone anything until like the 2nd or 3rd of August for the for at least the physicians to be freed.
John, from the 509, they want to know, what did you make of last night's Major League Baseball games without fans in the stands?
Get used to it. I mean, that's going to be what we're going to be seeing for a while. I mean, you had the crowd noise and everything else. I think that was a okay addition, but it's so strange to look up and see no fans in the stands. I don't know, the one on Garrett, remember Garrett Cole last year? And the one girl in the stands who... You saw she did it last night.
Yeah, from her house.
Yeah, from her house to a big screen. And so I guess, she didn't get in trouble for that one. But it's kind of interesting. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. And again, I just think there's going to be a lot of home runs.
Yeah. From the 206, they want to know, how much longer do you think Jamal Adams has in New York?
I think if he shows up, I mean, something might be accommodated before in August or something like that. I mean, again, nothing can be done now, even with his contract. They think they should try to sign him, but if they're going to keep the cap at 175 last year and the players go for that, I mean, he's trapped. I mean, so because again, they can't. Every team is going to be in a bind if it's 175. Which is now the latest proposal by the owners that came up from 165, which I just think is ridiculous. Keep the cap flat. You're going to get enough benefit next year if you're going to be teams, and you're going to destroy the NFC because you have so many teams over the cap, Philadelphia, New Orleans, Atlanta, Kansas City's over the cap. You're breaking up teams if you take it to 175. That's just too much. So, I think he could be accommodated in a trade sometime in August.
253 wants to know, John, they want to know, since you have traveled to Philadelphia numerous times in your years covering the NFL, they want to know, which cheesesteak do you prefer, Geno's or Pat's?
Geno's, I think, because fortunately, when you go in there, I don't I have the car to be able to get to the stadium and all that stuff, but I don't get to do it. But I like Geno's the best.
we go. I have never been to Philadelphia. That's definitely on my list of cities I want to hit up before too long. You know, get a nice cheesesteak, throw it down like that. That'd be nice. John from the 206, they want to know, how much increase do you think Adam Thielen has in his numbers without Stephon Diggs there?
I think a lot, because you can probably say maybe a 10% increase, if not 15%, because now he becomes the number one guy, and we'll see how Justin Jefferson kind of fits in for Stephon Diggs, now that they got, a first-round pick that you're able to get and get a wide receiver in there. But, yeah, I have to say a 10 to 15% increase.
From the 425, they want to know, John, the Washington football team, are they in trouble with their hiring of Terry Bateman? It looks like I think Pro Football Talk mentioned that the NFL is investigating them, whether they violated the Rooney Rule or not.
Yeah, they might. I think that's the case. And and they were even questioning the woman who came off TV and now is running the broadcast thing. It's like, that's a little too much, because, again, it's like, okay, she's running the broadcast team. And so that one's okay. But, yeah, I think that they probably moved a little too quick, and it's a high office position. And so, yeah, it does need to be investigated.
From the 360, they want to know, what do you make of Todd Gurley's comments today saying that he's prepared not to play if they can't agree on a COVID-19 plan?
They've already agreed on the COVID-19 plan, so it's like, deal with it. I mean, they agreed with it on Saturday night. I mean, you had the Twitter storm on Sunday, which, of course, angered the owners because they had already had the agreement. And so, I can understand your apprehension, but the protocol is already taken care of. So, Todd, grow up.
415 wants to know, is Everson Griffin still a possibility for Seattle?
I'd say no. I just think there's too many question marks that they're looking at. And I think you're seeing this with some of the guys that are still on the street. They're a little bit older, and Griffin had some of the mental issues 2 years ago. And so I think that even though he was coached by Pete Carroll in college at USC, I think that's one they're not going to go for.
503 wants to know, John, how much longer do we have to wait for the NFL to rule on Josh Gordon?
I guess a little bit of time, but I mean, you would hope it's going to be before Tuesday. But one thing that is a problem because of the virus is that how does he get tested? Because again, he has to be drug tested, and a lot of the people are not getting drug tested. And so, you would hope he would find out something here in the next week. But right now, nobody knows. Don't know about Randy Gregory. We don't know about some of the other players who are trying to come back from suspension.
The 425 wants to know, John, would you cut KJ Wright or Bradley McDougald if it made room for Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, I think that would have to happen, yeah. I think that I'd hate to do it because, KJ's such a great leader, McDougal's such a great leader, but if you're going to, pay, $9 to $10 million for Clowney, something has to give. First, I would have to think that, you'd have to look at the guys, that David Moore with the $2.1 million salary, maybe Jacob Hollister with a $3.2 million, Brandon Jackson would be in trouble because he plays defensive end, and, he's $2.13. I mean, you can maybe make up some of it with some of the guys, they had the escalators and things of that nature, but you'd hope you'd be able to try to keep those two guys because they're good players.
And then finally, from the 253, John, they want to know, which team do you think has a better shot at getting the number one overall pick next year, Jacksonville or Washington?
I'd lean toward Jacksonville. I mean, because they've lost so much on defense. And, they still have Unique Ndakwe, who does not want to be there, and they'll have to eventually trade him. So, Washington does have a good defensive line, but I think right now Jacksonville is the worst team.
That'll do it for this week's text questions.
Okay, and of course, we come up with our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Time for our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. And Dave, obviously baseball is the big topic we want to get into, but I wanted to give an update right now from that owners meeting press conference, conference call that they had, you know, and this one I don't like. I think this is a bad move to make. You know, they're now talking about the minimum cap, the maximum loss in the cap would be $23 million next year, which would not only be devastating to the players, it would be devastating to the teams because, you know, you're going to break up a lot of the NFC teams that have big quarterback numbers and all that stuff. That one's a bad one that comes up from 165. But what they did do, and this one seems fair, they're going to have taken the 90-man roster and take it down to 80, but they're going to do that on August the 16th. So at least you get a chance to look at the players. That's a good one. Then they got a two-tiered opt-out plan where they can opt out by a certain date with a stipend for the year, and there's also medical support that they're going to get. That seems to be okay. They did ratify no preseason games. That is no surprise. And, you know, they're still kind of working on the force majeure, which is, you know, if you get past the first game and you've got to been in the league 5 years, then your base salary is guaranteed for the rest of the year. So what do you think of the way things are coming? Because now basically it comes down to if they can settle on the economic issue in the next day or two. And they did say the camps will start on time on the 18th of July, on the 28th of July. So your thoughts?
Yeah, the economic issue kind of popped its head up a little bit would be my thought. The number, you're right, that's the thing that you got to understand if you're a fan about the cap is, you know, you think the owners naturally would want to see it go down. Well, they wouldn't. It'd be impossible to keep if it was to go the way they anticipate with 20-25% loss of revenue this year. It would go down, like you said, $20-30 million, and that would force a lot of teams to bust things up. So the owners don't want to see that happen either. You know, they got a vested interest in keeping their teams together, especially the good teams. So there's a lot of common ground for them to be talking on, is my takeaway, as opposed to it being acrimonious or getting bad. And some have suggested that it could. I don't think that it's going to, because both sides want basically the same thing to happen.
Yeah, they'll get it done. I mean, you know, I know the one thing that the owners are kind of rubbing it in is that on Sunday morning they had the tweet fest where they had so many players ripping the league for the protocol. And, you know, what happened on Saturday night, the union had already agreed on the protocol. It's like, you know, they were fine on it, but you had this tweet storm. And so I think, you know, this $23.3 million down is just one of those things. It's like, oh, you tried to do that to us. We're going to kind of ram it to you, because the simple thing on this is keep the cap flat for next year, because, you know, you're the New Orleans Saints, the Atlanta Falcons, the Dallas Cowboys, Kansas City Chiefs, they're going to have to lose so many players to make up for the $20 million loss that you're not going to have much left. And so it's going to certainly cut salaries. It's going to cut a big time, but that's not good to go below 198.2.
Enough of that for today, John. It's baseball season.
Yes. It's also football season in one way, too. Your thoughts on Russell Wilson and Sierra having a baby and, of course, 8 pounds, I think 1 ounce, named Wynn Harrison Wilson.
No thoughts at all, John.
Okay, so let's talk baseball. What did you think of last night?
It was weird. It was good to have it back, but I thought it was weird. You know, it was a strange vibe. You know, first it felt like a spring training game, and then it didn't because it's in the double-deck stadium. And then, of course, it got rained out, which was typical for baseball's luck, the first game between the Nationals and the Yankees. But it felt strange. That was my biggest takeaway is you know, clearly it's Major League Baseball, and it doesn't feel like exhibitions anymore, but it doesn't feel like baseball felt like, you know. It just feels a little bit different.
Yeah, it does. I mean, and I, the one thing I just seem to notice, and I guess it's a continuation of last year, is balls fly out. I know you had power hitters getting home runs, but I just think that, you don't call it the juice ball, but the new ball is more prone.
Go ahead and call it that, John. Let's call it the juice ball. Yeah, I mean, that's a perfect thing for it. I mean, it was Stanton's 460 feet or something like that. You're seeing guys with slight builds hitting opposite field, long home runs. And the first, I guess it's not surprising. It's a little surprising. Usually Typical spring training in baseball, pitchers are ahead of the hitters. But this is different. The way this is shaken out is the hitters are ahead of the pitchers. So it means you're going to see a lot of those tape measure shots in the days to come. But I think also it means when you're trying to look at the teams going to be good, it's going to be the teams with the deepest pitching staffs because, you know, pitching ultimately wins out. But there are going to be more runs scored this year. There's no question about that. And we'll see if it's at a historic pace. It wouldn't surprise me if it was that you had a higher rate of run scoring than any other season because of the fact that you had pitchers gear up and then shut down and then are trying to gear up again. And you have teams doing like what the Mariners are doing, six-man rotations and all kinds of different approaches.
Yeah, no doubt. So it's time, I guess, to make that prediction for the Mariners. How many wins of the 60?
I want to be optimistic, but I'll be optimistic and I'll say they get to 25. 25 would be all right. Again, I think that their year is very much about their young players and the potential that we see from them. I think from a wins and losses standpoint, they simply don't have the bullpen. The Tom Murphy injury is one that just really hurts them incredibly bad as well. They do have some great looking young talent that is going to be very impressive to see. But as we were talking about briefly yesterday, I think they're in a really tough division, and they're playing a lot of games in that division, of course. So I think it'll be the wins and losses at the end of the year is going to be tough to come by. But I think that basically people are going to wind up feeling good because you're going to see a lot from the guys you want to see a lot from.
Yeah. Well, how do you think they'll do in the 10 games against the Astros? Because last year they were 1-18 against them. You know, if they win 3 or 4 games, that could even rise it up a little bit above 24 or 25.
Sure. I mean, it would be that was an anomaly last year, even though the Astros were really good and the Mariners were really bad. You've seen that when the Astros were really bad and the Mariners were pretty good. You know, the Astros won a couple season series from them. So it's not going to be a shocker if the Mariners actually have a lot of success against them. It's a weird thing in baseball how that plays out. But certainly talent wise, Houston is the better club, and there's no question about that. And we'll see. Starting today, what they look like matched up against each other. But that was an anomaly last year. That I don't see happening again this year.
Yeah, but that's the interesting thing because I was just looking at this right now. I know the FanGraph projected them as 22-38, but of course, if they go 1-9 against the Astros, each win against the Astros would bump them up. If they could go even 4-6 against the Astros, which is probably too much to ask, now you are talking about 26 wins.
Not necessarily, John. There are you look at other matchups they had where they had more success last year and they don't have it this year. I mean, baseball doesn't play out that way. The good teams lose a lot and the bad teams win a lot, comparatively speaking, compared to a league that's playing 10 or 15 games. So, we'll see. Like I said, 25 is optimistic and, I think they've got some real good young talent and we'll see how it plays out. And, they need to try, and if they can, avoid those young hitters getting into long slumps and things like that, because there's not a whole lot of season to correct that sort of stuff. But, they've got some momentum coming out of camp, and I think everyone is kind of excited to see what it looks like tonight.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I think it's going to be fun. And, of course, 6:10 is going to be the broadcast time here on ESPN Seattle. And, of course, 5 o'clock in the pregame show. And I think that everybody's looking forward to it and looking forward for a good weekend. And so we always look forward to talking to our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. So, David, I hope you enjoy the weekend.
John, you too. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk again on Monday.
Okay, that sounds good. And, of course, I'll be back tomorrow from 8 to 9 to take your phone calls, and then we'll be back on Monday at 10. Curtis Rogers, thank you for everything this week.
Thanks for having me, John.
Okay, and, of course, we'll be back tomorrow at 8. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.